And then it's going to fill out the top. Probably do fill out the top. There's nothing. I never feel off the top.
But it's nice that it's still allowed, isn't it, Mark?
Oh, well, it's not so satisfactory.
Yes, thank
you. I mean, I love coming to talk to you. It's a wonderful opportunity, and it means so much to me. And indeed, it does to everybody to have the opportunity to come to speak to those who they love on Earth.
I know. Sitting there. It's
very vast difference to people if they understood this and realized that the death isn't what they think it is. It isn't the
contact
between them.
There's no death.
It's only an illusion.
Mm.
Man has created death in his own mind. It doesn't really exist anymore.
I wonder why they did.
Well, I suppose it's because they were so materialistic in as much as they lived completely and wholly and solely for materialism. That with someone that they've known and loved, least as they think, that is in a physical sense, then as far as they're concerned, that's the end of it. Have always been people who believed in something after death, but never quite understood what it was.
No, they didn't think about resurrection and the distance.
Well, of course, the point is that man has always sort of looked upon now life as something purely materialistic. That when they started creating in their own minds an idea of a new life, or a new heaven, or a new existence, call it what you will, they assumed that it would be in a physical body. They can never sort of, even then, get away from the old materialistic conception. Even today, I mean, after all said and done, until thousands of people who believe in the life after death, their conception of it is extraordinarily materialistic.
Sure.
And many, many people who I've heard the world calls religious, or in some senses good anyway, because they conform to certain creeds or dogmas and so on, they think that they're coming back upon the earth in a material form on the great day, as it were. Really, when you come to think about it, the things that some people believe in are quite fantastic.
Absolutely.
And yet it's all man-made. It's a sort of scrabble letters that support their theories. And yet the church, taken as a whole, does still preach this ridiculous idea of heaven and hell. Heaven if you've been awfully good and you've followed certain tenets and so on. And hell if you haven't sort of followed what they think is right. Really, when one comes to analyze it, it doesn't hold water at all.
Yeah.
Actually, I always feel that that man has limited himself by his own attitude and outlook.
Well, isn't that he limits
No, not only in that exactly, but the point is that man limits God to a great extent. By his own limitation. I mean, once man can rid himself of materialism as regards the things that appertain to the things of spirit, which makes our perhaps a little bit complicated, but it's extraordinary how man even assumes that spiritual things have a materialistic basis.
Well, they can't get away from the materialism.
You know, the point is that they can only think and see and understand something that is physically tangible to them. When a thing gets beyond that, they can't grasp it at all.
Last time I was here, you said, for heaven's sake, where you bring down the hilly path?
Well, I don't want to sound prejudiced, but I'm afraid I haven't got very much time for the church or for so many who adhere to it, because their minds are so narrowed, unbelievably narrowed, that they cannot get beyond a certain point. They can accept only that which falls in a certain degree within their own experience or their own belief. They're so limited by their own knowledge, if you call it knowledge.
Yes, want of knowledge.
Yes, well, probably there's more truth to say by getting back to that. The point is that they have so, as it were, yes, well, I mean, the whole point is that they put it all in a nutshell, if you put it like that. They think they've got all knowledge which is contained in a nutshell. Whereas actually, of course, it's knowledge is something so vast, so tremendous, that even the most highly evolved can only grasp the small percentage of it. But they think things that what is contained, shall we say, in the Bible from cover to cover is all there is to know. They can't accept anything beyond that. And yes. Then, although they say they accept all that they read in the Bible, very few people that are honest do.
Yes, but then they don't interpret it right, do they?
But the whole point is that the Bible tireless bit. Well, obviously, there's much truth, there's much goodness in the Bible. I mean, in the simple teachings of Jesus, if one were to follow in the example that he set, then man could not go far wrong in his material life, the things that he did, and his outlook and his spiritual development would, in consequence, be great. But the point is that they try to narrow things down to such a degree, they try to make out of the simple truth of Jesus so much that it's complex and involved. They try to tag on so much over the centuries that had nothing whatever to do with Jesus. I mean, the virgin birth, it's as old as the hill. It was the basis of practically every ancient religion. That obviously crept in centuries after Jesus' passed and the death of Jesus. Had no foundation in fact at all. There's so much there's so much that is mythical that they've tacked on and made it all so mysterious and so sort of difficult for the intelligent person to believe. There's so many people in consequence of the years as they have become more educated and more intelligent and they think more deeply for themselves. Obviously just can't accept it, and the consequence the churches have lost ground constantly, increasingly over the years. The church holds on to so much that has no foundation in fact.
Yes, and they've built up a lot themselves, haven't they? That doesn't bear on it at all. I mean, all their dogs and all that sort of thing.
Well, I mean, what is the church service when it's analyzed? Repetition. Beginning to end. And going on for years and years and years. Who can go on singing the same old hymns and the same banal words and have any faith or belief and feeling about them?
And you wouldn't go to church at all.
And then consider the peculiar manner in which often the clergyman gives an address. I mean, the awful, toneless, humdrum, miserable voice. I mean, it's not a kind of person out of church.
Yes, but Mike, you must remember this. Everything is depicted of them, and they're paid practically enough.
Well, I would say they're paid for far more than they're worth, but still they're
worth. No, I don't agree with you. I think they're worth an awful lot of time, but it's worth a jolly little.
Yes, I would agree with you. Our point is this, that I think the point is that although there are very good people, as the world terms good anyway, in the church, that is, working in the church, serving in the church, and also among the generous, the point is that what is the point in going round and round in a circle which has no beginning and no end, where you just don't achieve everything? I mean, I'm prejudiced against the church for various very good reasons.
Yes, when I say this,
I speak for untold millions of people here.
Yes.
The church has never lifted its finger against war.
No, I thank you.
Now take the recent war and the war before that. What did the church do to help stop it? Did they proclaim the simple teachings of Jesus, who was the Prince of Peace, and come solemnly out against war? No, they didn't. What did the Pope do during the war? Did he say, I'll excommunicate every Roman Catholic who takes part in war? Of course he didn't. But if he had done that, there's no doubt that Italy would never have come into the war, because being such a strong Roman Catholic country, they would not have dared to go against their Pope. I mean, the point is that the church preaches the Prince of Peace and yet doesn't follow his example. There's nothing more important than following the simple teachings that Jesus gave. I am all for Jesus, but I am far, far removed from the church, and I'm very, very proud and very happy to say it.
Yes.
That's why I seek this inquiry of the church into this subject. Although I know there are good people in it and sincere ones, will achieve nothing. Because the prejudice of the church is so great, and they object deep down within them to any other person or group of persons setting up anything which may take away their power. The church is always prized on two things, fear and power. And take those things away, they have nothing left.
Oh, well, I think you're a spot hard on them, Mike.
I'm very hard on them, and I intend to be hard on them. Because until we rid ourselves of the shackles of the church, there can be no true spiritual progress for humanity. The church has done good in certain respects, I don't deny that, but it's done untold harm. Over the centuries, innumerable people have died terrible, tragic, untimely deaths, the parents of the church,
yes.
because people didn't believe in their particular belief or particular creed or dogma.
Mm.
Our point is the church has always been against human progress. It's never, never gone forward step by step with humanity. It's always stood its ground. Hard down, hard ground, believe me.
Yes, well,
and if you haven't found the head of the church, God help you.
Listen, how would you get it, this religion of Jesus, to the masses? Well,
every man can find Jesus within himself.
Yes, but he doesn't.
If he reads his Bible and uses wisdom and discretion, he can find the truth therein, but he has to learn how to discard all the things which have been added to it, often by churchmen over the centuries, for their own end.
Yes. To me, the Quakers come here to me about it.
I agree with you. The Quakers, in my opinion, are nearest, possibly, to real Christians.
Yes.
More nearer than any Orthodox religious body.
Yes, I agree.
After all, they sit and wait for the spirit to move them. They have no creed, form, or ceremony. They gather together humbly to worship God and to ask his divine guidance. And they wait for the spirit to move them. Actually, I'm nearer spiritualist. And when I use the term spiritualist, I mean true spiritualist.
Yes.
Unfortunately, there aren't very many true spiritualists in the real sense of the word.
Mm.
I know that at times I must strike you as being very sort of hard on the Orthodox Church.
I don't.
I think its history speaks for itself. Its history is its own condemnation.
Yes.
I don't come to condemn any more than anyone else. We leave it to the conscience of the individual or the group of individuals. And I think the Church's record is pretty grim.
Yes.
I agree with you on that,
sir. I'm not slightly interested in this Church inquiry, because I don't think it will get anywhere at all, because they'll cling to their little narrow ideas and their creed and their dogmas, and they'll try and swamp this truth, which is as free as the air, with it. They'll try and swamp this wonderful, glorious truth with their own creed and dogmas and confine it to the Church. They'll do more harm than good in the long run.
Yes, but supposing you've got to come back to Earth, what line would you take here?
What would you mean exactly?
Well, I mean, how would you get religion, real religion, to the masses? Half of them, more than half of them, don't read the Bible. And they don't, if they do, they don't practice it in their everyday life. How would you get to them?
I know.
It's all right to be destructive here.
That's the problem. I would say that one of the most important ways to get religion, and as I use that in a sense, but put it like that, then, the teachings of Christ, if one were to get the teachings of Christ to the masses, one would do endeavors to, shall we say, what Christ did, that is, set an example.
Yes.
And as you set an example yourself, you can't expect people to follow you. I mean, so many Christians, for instance, talk so glibly about Christ and attend their church regularly, for instance. But they're by far a long way from setting an example.
I quite agree.
And after all, Christ did the things that he did because he understood his inner divinity and his, shall we say, oneness with God. I mean, for instance, so much that the Christ did in the form of miracles. You term them miracles because you don't understand them.
Yes.
Miracles are miracles because you don't understand how it's done.
Yes.
And the point is that Christ knew what today his followers do not know. He knew the power within himself. From within yourself comes opportunities and power to do great things. Christ was able to heal the sick. Christ was able even to raise the dead. And so many other things that one reads about he did. That the church did. To the clergyman,
it's
really.
Coming to it, isn't it?
Yes, very slowly. But did it ever come from within the church? Oh, no. It came from without the church. And now the church is beginning to realize there might be something in it, and they might be, in consequence, be able to make good use of it and bring people back into the church. Their motives are ulterior, in my opinion, not good.
Yes.
They want to get people back into the church. They want to make the church powerful again. And so, they realize that that which has been going on outside the church, people have found truth outside the church, they might be able to bring it into the church. And what about those who are still outside, and because of their freedom of thought and will, have been able to make progress in this great truth? It is because the people outside the church have been free of the shackles of the church. They have made spiritual progress, and the church is in consequence of not a great deal. But now the church is getting frightened. It wants to drag them back. And you'll find that ere long, if it is brought back into the church to some degree, that they'll try and strangle it and make it impossible for people to be free outside the church. The church has always wanted to strangle people outside, wanted to keep things to itself. I have no time, patience, or interest in the church.
No. Difficult, it's a terribly difficult subject down here, Mike. You see, you get a sort of air view of it, you know, from above.
Well, I'm sorry if I sound vehement.
No, I don't.
But I'm not sorry in a sense, because I know that freedom of thought, freedom of expression, freedom in so many different forms exists much more outside the church than within it.
Yes?
The church wants you to go its way in its narrow little confines. And if you accept and believe that the church would have you believe, then you are all right when you come here, which, believe me, is a lot of hooey. Because a lot of the people who had this narrow concept of life and religion, if you like to use the term, through the church, found things vastly different when they came here. In fact, they were hampered in their progress because of the narrow beliefs that they'd got. In fact, some people coming here, believing that they were really God's elect, that they were the chosen ones, still exist over here in a certain sphere, believing that they are the only persons who still exist in this world. They are blind to any other form of life or advancement. They are so narrowed in their outlook that they really and genuinely think that they are the only ones who've been reborn, they term it. And even they are waiting to come back on Earth in a physical shape, waiting for the resurrection of the body. All these false teachings which the church has given over the centuries have done untold harm to untold millions of people and separated families and individuals. Believe me, the church has much to answer for, and I have little or no interest really for it whatsoever. And all this recent probing which is going on into this truth, although I know there are sincere people in it, at the same time, I feel the outcome will not be good. While spiritualism is free, it has chance to breathe and make progress. And individuals can feel and think and accept what they can accept by their development of mind and of spirit freely and make progress. But once it is brought into the confines of the church with all its rigmarole, with all its superstition, with all its knowledge, it will stifle it again.
Mike, when you first got over, what did you feel like about it? This didn't come to you straight away, did it?
It didn't come to you straight away, no. But fortunately, I wasn't hidebound and creedbound and priestbound like so many were.
No.
I was able to think clearly. I was able to make progress because of the freedom of my thought. And I was able to contact many souls who had made great spiritual advances, and they were able to help me in so many ways. And I was able to come back to you very soon afterwards.
Yes.
And I noticed when you needed help, it wasn't the church that gave to.
My dear, it's very difficult to get help, isn't it? Especially in the world as it is.
We come to break down the barriers that lie between men, to break down the barriers that man has created by racial intolerance and hatred, by creed and by dogma. We come down that we might in some measure bring all peoples together as one family under one God. We have a purpose and a mission. We are not interested in powers and principalities. We're not interested in churches and in creeds and in dogmas. We're not interested in all the things that hold man to earth. We are interested in the things that make them free, that make them well and happy in spirit and in mind and in body. We come that we might in some measure make your world a better place to live in for the people who follow after you, that they might be born free in their mind to live and to love and to learn and to understand the things that are of God. We have great purpose in coming, Mother. We're not interested in the church. We're not interested in institutions as such. We're interested only in individuals, collectively and individually. We come to break down all the barriers that time and man has in his ignorance created. We know that we can do great things, but we know we can only do it when man's mind is freed from the shackles that bind it to the earth. And in my opinion, creed and dogma are two of the most difficult things to rid them of, and that's one of our courses that we have to take to break down the stronghold of the church. And the church's foundation is still strong, even though it's crumbling. We know that there is no strength in the church, because there never has been true spirituality in it.
I agree with you, Mike. I get more help from you than from anybody, but I thought perhaps you know that my fault.
No. I know that there's only one way to salvation. That is by man's own desire for goodness in himself to be made manifest on the earth. That man himself, within himself, has great strength of character, great strength of spirit. And that if he will look into himself and bring forth that which he finds, as Jesus did, nothing is impossible. The church will not do that for you. An individual must do it for himself. But we can show the way, and we can give great help and aid to those who seek and strive. Once a man begins to seek and strive within himself for greater things, then we can help him greatly. I know that there's much that we have to do. Sometimes it seems almost impossible to us to do it, but we can and we shall do it, for that which we are doing is not only our work, it is greater than ourselves, because we are but instruments of God. We do the work of God, and we do it freely. We have no axe to grind. We do it because we love humanity, because we want to prevent humanity making mistakes it has made over many years of the past. We want the truth to shine forth and make men free.
You help me a lot.
We have a great person coming. Believe me.
I'm sure of that. I think you more people can't hear.
Give me some idea about what happens to the people that are so bound to creed and dogma when they talk the other side. The first part.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious. I mean, the point is that a man, immediately after death, is no different to what he was 5 minutes before. That is, in regard to his outlook, his character, and his personality, and so on. And therefore, a person who has very strong religious conviction still has very strongly when he comes here. But he begins to realize that it's rather like a fish out of water. And he begins to realize that a lot of his old ideas and teachings and creeds and so on just don't apply. They don't fit. They just are not, shall we say, natural here. Because the first thing he realizes is that everything here is normal. Everything here is natural. People are in themselves very much the same as they were on earth. But without all the heaviness, if I can use such an expression, of the material life, without all the old ideas which kept them back in their mental and spiritual progress, he begins to realize that many of the old ideas he had were purely man's material conception of a heaven and of God. He begins to realize that life here is a normal, natural thing, and that all around him is great beauty in many, many forms, and that he himself is exactly himself as he was, but much that he held fast to, and which he thought would, shall we say, make for himself a heaven because of his belief, he finds it's not necessarily there, that many, many phases of life exist, and that he himself must adjust himself to his condition in which he finds himself. And of course there are always those who will meet him, friends, relations, people he's known and loved, who still love him, and they will talk to him and endeavor to make him realize that he has to rid himself of much that he thought was true when on earth, and make himself, as it were, mentally free to be able to adjust himself to his new form of existence. I mean, so many people have such a hazy idea of what life is like or could be like on this side, and those who have very orthodox, strong views, a Christian, if you like, they really do believe that they are elected, as it were, for a phase of life which is far superior to any other, which of course is not there. because man is a complex creature in so many different ways, so many shapes and forms, and there is no person who is so good and no person who is so bad in all the redeeming features. And because you do certain tenets doesn't make you a better person. What makes a person better is the things that they have done, the thoughts and the actions, and the things that have helped make that person a character or an individual. Just because you believe in a certain something doesn't save you, doesn't make you a supreme being, doesn't make you worthy, shall we say, to become one of God's elect. Every man must find for himself his own path of progress. And of course it goes through many phases, many states of existence, and takes generations of time. And the earth life is merely a short phase of one's existence. And it is important that one should have to go through it and learn all that one can. But the reason that one comes into the earth is not what you can bring out of it, but rather what you can put into it. From within yourself, the spirit which is there, which can guide and give you strength and give you the power, the illumination, as it were, is so often hidden. In fact, in 99 cases out of 100 or more, is hidden. Because man is taught when on earth to develop his material powers, his brain, how to earn a living in different ways, and so many things he is taught. But he's never taught the things of the spirit. Admittedly, he may go to a Sunday school and then graduate into a church. But what does it teach him? It teaches him the most narrow of all conceptions of spirit. It doesn't give him spiritual freedom. It doesn't give him a path to tread that will really enlighten his path and make it one of usefulness with life for him. Unless a religion is completely free, a belief is completely free from within oneself, where one can sort of expand and grow and not be held down and shackled down by creating a dogma which holds no weight in time and in truth, then it is of no use. Life is entirely up to the individual. I know that to a certain extent a person's life is affected by conditions around him, by relations and friends and business and so many things affect and make it impossible sometimes for him to do things he'd like to do. But nevertheless, man has, to a great extent, free will, in which he can do the things which are within his conscience. And every man has a conscience. And the point is that one's conscience can be one's guide. I don't say it can always be entirely safeguarded, because even their consciences differ according to the individual. What is evil to one man may not necessarily be evil to another. But the point is that there is a path that all can tread, within which one can do so much that will not only help oneself to progress spiritually and mentally, but help those around you. But that Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. How many people do that, even among so-called professing Christians? The point is, there is no greatness in power. There is no greatness in even tradition, although some people would like you to have it there. The point is that power comes from humility, from kindliness, from sympathy, from love, from sharing all that you have with others. I don't mean by that just merely mercenary, material things. The things that help man to grow are the things which are purely and wholly of the spirit. And every man has within himself the spirit of God. To bring that out, Jesus said that you should look within yourself. And it is true that within yourself you'll find all that you need. For as you begin to understand that you have within yourself that power of God, so you begin to grow and expand and become, as it were, more holy of God, there are no limits that are set to man if he will follow the right path and seek to develop the spirit within himself. The church, I know we get back to the church with unfailing regularity, but the point is that the church does not encourage man to develop the powers of the spirit. In fact, it discourages it. Because if you were to go to the church and you were to declare that you had seen this or had experienced that, the first thing they think was that you were a little bit peculiar in the head, to say the least of it. But the clergy, who should know most, know so little. Their task is to heal with me. Their task is to comfort those who mourn with knowledge, not with just platitudes and, well, it might be this or it might be that, and if she or he has pleaded in the tenets of the church and so on, and all is well. I mean, the whole point is the church is blind, has been blind for centuries, I'm told centuries. He just doesn't express the things that are, as I of God in the complete real sense that they should. They have a little proof which they swap so much that it's a materialistic conception. Life is to a great extent on both sides what you yourself made it. A man is no more or no less than what he has become through his own experience. A man can be great or he can be very, very low in the scale of things. The church could be such a leader of these things, but it isn't that the tragedy. I know I must start, and I must admit I am very prejudiced, because I have seen only too well the results of two wars. Although the first one, I knew nothing. I've seen the results in as much as I've met many here who passed over through the first war, and of course many of my friends in the second war, and I know only too well the church could have done so much if it did nothing, because it is only concerned with its own material power and aggrandizement, and this new searching for truth which the church is making, though there are good people in it, sincere ones, nevertheless I feel, and I know I'm right to say, will lead nowhere. Certainly the church will strangle it if it can, and it strangled everything that can bring it up. Can you imagine a bishop or an archbishop standing down, shall we say, in place of a medium who has the power to bring through some great soul from this side who can give an oration that would put the archbishop into shame? Do you think an archbishop would, for instance, demean himself in his own estimation to stand aside and allow an ordinary person who is not in the church, uneducated as that may be, to stand in the pulpit and give an oration which would shame the archbishop? The archbishop and all those who hold sway are concerned more with our own personal affairs. Besides, there's so much that one could go into for which possibly there's no point at the moment in doing. But I have little or no faith in the church. It failed generations, untold generations of souls, and it will go on failing until gradually it will disappear.
And then what?
Then, by that time, this truth will have made such tremendous progress that minds will be free of dogmas and creeds, and man will know for himself in various shapes and forms and ways. And also, although I have little patience in the sense with science, in as much as often it seems that science brings forth after destruction rather than construction, yet nevertheless, even scientists will turn more and more to this truth, and from it they will be able to learn much, and they will be helped and guided. And if we find, as I think we shall, the individuals whom we are seeking, we shall perfect an instrument in the years to come, which will make possible communication between our world and yours in such a way that there can be no skepticism, and which will in itself be such a revolutionary thing that it will forever break down the power of the church. Follow the teachings of Jesus. Follow his example. It is the greatest and most glorious example in the whole human history. But at the same time, do not allow the church to make you accept its interpretation of a mythical Jesus wrapped in mystery. Jesus was humble, but the church would make him so great that he would be unapproachable by you. Jesus did not want to set up a religion. Jesus didn't come to form a religion. Jesus came to show the power that man might follow it. But the church, to a great extent, has hidden that path from the eyes and the minds of the people.
Yes, I can
see
you, right?
Yes,
I must go.
Well, dearie.
I haven't said one-tenth of what I wanted to say.
Well,
and what I have
start.
Said, I have not said perhaps as well as I might. And if I have found it just a little bit, well, prejudice, I suppose, it isn't really prejudice.
No.
It's only that I, and untold millions of souls here, who suffered over the last few years through war, which could have been prevented if the church, to a certain extent, had made some attempt to play its part, instead of praising, if they had condemned, much might be avoided. I do not trust the church, because it has always failed humanity in its hour of need.
Right, I'd like to ask before you go, Mike.
Yes,
they're coming up next to 90.
Yes. Yes.
I was wondering if you could tell us anything that you'd like, something you'd like to ask, if you would try to have come through.
You'd like me to come, would you?
Yes, I would.
Well, I promise you, I will come. Yes. To my husband, to be present, and anything I can do to help. I am very well, you know.
Thank you very much.
Well, Mommy, I must go, but all my love and God bless.
Yes.
Goodbye, that's the wood and things.
So yes, yes, right, I know.
Yes, but I suppose we must try to be a little bit more forbearing to the church, but I find it very difficult, really, because I know so much unhappiness, so much misery could have been prevented if the church used its strength, which it has to a certain extent through God, to prevent war.
I quite agree, Mike.
But when they bless the soldiers, when they bless the flags, when they bless the ships, when they bless the guns, and when they ask God for help in that war, how can you respect them?
I didn't go inside the church last year. I couldn't.
Well, I have to go. Goodbye.
Goodbye, God bless.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Come on, Mark, you can't stand the church. Come on.
Goodbye, Mickey.